Stephen King has called him a national treasure. Comedian and actor Gilbert Gottfried is known for his trademark squinting and screeching and, of course, hilarious observations. He started his stand-up career at the age of 15. 1980, he joined the cast of SNL. He came to fame doing a series of memorable promo bits for MTV, and over the years he's appeared in numerous films, including Beverly Hills Cop 2 and The Aristocrats. In addition, Gilbert Gottfried regularly appeared on Late Night with David Letterman, Hollywood Squares, The Howard Stern Show, and The Tonight Show. He's also the creator and host of the very successful podcast, Gilbert Gottfried's Amazing Colossal Podcast, where he talks with the show business legends, icons, and behind-the-scenes talents who shaped his childhood and influenced his comedy. He'll be headlining the Woodstock Comedy Festival next weekend on September 24th at the Bearsville Theater in Woodstock, New York at 8 p.m. It is always a pleasure to welcome Gilbert Gottfried back to the roundtable. Gilbert, good morning. How are you?
That sounded like an obituary. Yeah, I was waiting for found dead today in his New York apartment.
Well, you've accomplished a lot. You have to be proud of that, I would assume.
We'll be best remembered.
But you do have to like the idea of how much you have accomplished, don't you?
I guess so. I guess I have done one or two things already. Yeah, just whenever I think my career is a total failure, I go, oh, okay, so I did one or two things.
Is that the life of a comedian where you always feel that you're one step away from complete failure in your career?
Yeah, I always feel like I've heard this theory with other people, too. Like, one day it's going to be the jig is up. Like, you've been fooling people this long. And I feel like show business is a party that I snuck into. And one day a guy's going to walk over to me with a clipboard and go, I'm sorry, your name's not on the list.
Do you feel that you have found your place in comedy? I mean, you have a very successful stand-up career. But are there still things that you would like to do and that you feel that you've missed the boat on? Or are you very happy with your lot in the comedic life?
I don't know. Very happy. It's one of those I've never really grabbed hold of. These people who say they're very happy or they have no regrets, I always think there's got to be something wrong with them then.
This is the way it comes across. When I listen to your podcast, you seem very at home and very comfortable, and as if, as much as Gilbert Gottfried can seem, you seem comfortable and happy with that.
I like on the podcast meeting a lot of these people that I normally wouldn't have tried to call. You know, it's like Bruce Dern and people like that you've watched for years, and Dick Van Dyke and Larry Storch. And so that's fun to do, and finding out stuff about them.
And isn't it, do you think it's you, or do you think it's often age, where they'll just take the gloves off and say whatever's on their mind?
Yeah, I think it's a little of both. I think sometimes it's me being just open and not caring about anything, and that makes them open up. And a lot of times, when people get older, they figure out what the hell.
Because we've had Bruce Stern on this show, and he just told just some of the greatest, filthiest stories. And we had to edit half of them out. But my God, they were great stories. Just terrific stuff.
Oh, yeah. He was telling great ones on my show. And also, he's got like this scary memory. Where he's one of these people who could tell you a movie that he did like 40 years ago, the date, the director, the cameraman, you know.
You also, you bring people in, as I mentioned this in the introduction, you bring people in that you were interested in. Now, you were in Hollywood Squares, you interviewed Peter Marshall, and, of course, he was a longtime host of Hollywood Squares, and you spent a lot of time talking about Paul Lynn.
Yes.
And I just think, Now, he was somebody that I grew up watching. I think many of our listeners grew up watching, and is a fascinating figure, somebody you do an impression of. I think that many people probably don't know who he is, but many other people just really enjoy hearing stories about this guy.
Oh, yeah. He's one of those that was a fixture of TV growing up. Where it was like, always like, oh my goodness, Samantha. That was like, he used to pop up on Bewitched.
Right.
And it was one of these things. Now, what I remember about Paul Lynn, as well as Charles Nelson Reilly and a bunch of people like that, was back then, people didn't think in terms of anyone being gay. You thought of them as being eccentric. So you would have Paul Lynn with a wife and kids on TV shows and movies.
Yeah. They did this with like Rip Taylor too. They were flamboyant, but they never actually referenced the sexuality.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. They were wild and eccentric. But the sex part, well, just like in his day, Liberace was like a sex symbol, like the women were crazy about him.
And now we look at it today, of course, and it's ultimately, and I think this is maybe the case with many comedians, and certainly in the case of Paul Lynn, you realize when you dig a little bit under the surface that is a very unhappy, unfortunate story there.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and or a lot of times guys who acted feminine were cast as evil. Vincent Price always had an effeminate way about him, so he was cast in evil parts.
Mm. When you look for the people that you bring on the show, is it just kind of going back and thinking about things that you enjoyed? Because to me, there would be no better get than Larry Storch. To have Larry Storch come on the show and tell F-Troop stories, that's gold.
Yeah, he was telling stories about F-Troop, and of course, the first thing I bring up with him is was the size of
Forrest Tucker.
God, Forrest Tucker, yeah. His private parts.
Right.
Because he also...
of like Milton Berle...
Oh, yes. Yeah. Milton Berle was world famous.
So is there anything that is off the table for you that you aren't interested in, that you don't want to talk about?
Anything clean or interesting. Anything remotely intelligent.
Yeah. And how does any of this information that you have of being an interviewer and talking to people, does that bleed at all into the comedy? I mean, can you tell, will that be a story that you will tell on stage, or are they fairly separate enterprises?
Pretty much separate. Yeah, like the podcast and the stand-up are pretty separate.
When you look at... You will be at the Woodstock Comedy Festival. You'll be headlining the festival. What can people expect from an evening with Gilbert Gottfried?
They can expect to sit there for 5 minutes and then look at each other and go, whose idea was it to see Gilbert Gottfried?
But do you feel that you've already won over your audience? I mean, when you walk out there, do you think, well, these people have come, they paid to see me, oh, they like me?
It puts you a little forward, but still, you have to, you know, in like that first minute or so, the audience is with you. And then you still have to win them over. It's a weird thing with audiences. It's like, ideally, I'd like to be hired to just walk out on stage, get the big round of applause, and then leave.
Well, Lewis Black is famous for saying that anticipation, that it doesn't get better than that. Like, that people are so excited to see you that once you've walked out, you really can't top that, so why try?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Once you start going into your act, then you're in trouble. But as long as it's just, oh, we're waiting and here he is and everyone's clapping and yelling, that's all I want.
There have been moments throughout your career, and people certainly are aware of this, that you have said things, you have talked about subjects that people feel are taboo and that shouldn't be made fun of. When you say them, do you have a sense that it's going to get a hostile reaction, or are you just sort of looking and seeing sociologically how this is going to turn out?
All of the above. It's like when I was like at the Hugh Hefner roast. It was like about less than 2 weeks after September 11th, and there was still smoke in the air, and no one quite knew what to do. Everyone was walking around in a daze, and I figured I wanted to be the first one to just touch upon it. You know, just to bring it out there in the open. And I did a September 11 joke, which I lost the audience as much as a person. One person screamed out too soon, which I thought meant I didn't take a long enough pause between the setup and punchline. And then I go into the aristocrats joke because I feel like I can't lose them any further. And that's all about incest and bestiality. And they started cheering. They were howling and clapping and stopping. So terrorist attack, bad taste. Incest and bestiality, good taste.
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense, does it?
No.
No. But I would assume for you as a comedian, once you figured it out, then really it's not fun anymore.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, well, there's something about comedy in general. Like when people do books about comedy and work out why a certain joke is funny or not, and it always kills it.
Because you can get too much into the weeds of why it works, why it doesn't work.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's like cutting open a frog to see how it jumps and then go, oh, it's not jumping anymore.
But when it does jump,
yes,
it is enjoyable.
Yes.
That moment is exciting for you.
Yeah, and even more exciting when they hand me a check at the end of the night.
And those are good. Yeah, those are good nights. Those are good moments. I'm going to ask you something that I just don't know the answer to, but I'm curious about. You were a regular on the Howard Stern Show. You have, how long has it been since you've been on that program?
Oh God, a while now. Yeah, and you know, a few years ago, I was on the Howard Stern Show more than Howard Stern was.
You would regularly come in. You would do roasts. You would sit in.
Oh,
you would
Yeah.
You were omnipresent. Now, what happened? What do you have a sense of what happened and why you're not on that program anymore?
I don't know. No particular reason. But I think in everything in show life in general, but in show business especially. You know, you never really can kick your shoes off and say, okay, I'm here. And, I remember when Arsenio Hall was on the air, and for a while he called me in every couple of weeks, and I just come out there, get crazy on the panel, and then one day he just stopped. And, a few things are like that. Sometimes they just stop, and then you got to go, okay, now on to the next thing.
do you think that there was something that you did and something that you have to repair, or they've just decided to go in a different direction?
I think it's a different direction. I really don't know. I think he's become Bob Walters now.
Yeah.
And I think he's on once a month or some crazy
two or three times a week, and then takes a lot of vacation in between, sure.
Yeah, which you can't argue with him too much. And I also kind of feel like with Howard Stern, I can't, what can I really say? Like, oh, the last laugh is on him, because without me, he'll only be making $500 billion this year.
But for fans of the show, and I would count myself one of them, for fans of the show, you were part of the fabric of that program. That was a perfect place for you. You could do your stuff there. It was unencumbered. It was a lot of fun. Sure, you can do it on the podcast as well, but it was just really great. And not to have that anymore, it seems odd to me. Because if, like, not you, then who can be on that show?
Yeah, it's become, I think, I don't listen on a regular basis, so I think it's become more of like an interview show. And I think the days of the wrestling lesbians segments are over. Which is why I used to tune in and why I used to show up.
And when have you ever had anything else? You mentioned Arsenio Hall, but does it make sense to you? I mean, do you feel welcome in the current landscape of late night shows now?
I've been, I think, on each one, so I guess I am. That's something that always scares you, that you think, is this a whole? To me, I feel like the second I sort of figured out what show business it was, it just kind of changed.
You have longevity in this business. You're able to go at the punches, and if you don't find, well, the Stern Show or something, there'll be something else.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, but you always feel like the jig could be up. But, yeah, so far, the thing I always remind myself of, because like a lot of people, I'm always thinking, look, I'm a giant failure. You know, I start getting into depressions. And then I think of, like, when all the years of trying to get on at the open mic nights in the comedy clubs, and it just seems like millions of people that I'd see there every night for years and then just completely disappeared off the planet. And I thought, I'm like walking around. I have people coming up to me all the time wanting my picture. I do movies and TV and clubs. And it's like, I'm not a complete failure. You always think you are, especially in this business.
Well, obviously you're not a failure. You're going to be headlining the Woodstock Comedy Festival, for goodness sake. September 24th at the Bearsville Theater in Woodstock. Have you ever been to Woodstock before?
I didn't go to the original one. And I don't know, I might have passed through there or something. I'm sure I must have been. I don't remember places I've been to or worked. It's like with clubs, there are clubs where I swear I've never been to that state before. And I go to the club and I see that I've already signed their wall.
Well, you can hopefully sign the wall at the Bearsville Theater. Remind yourself when you're there again in a couple of years, and have a great time. It's Wednesday the 24th at the Bearsville Theater. It's the Woodstock Comedy Festival. Gilbert, it's always great to have you on the program. Thank you very much for being with us, and have a great time on the 24th.
Oh, thank you.
Great pleasure. Thank you. You can find out more information about Gilbert Gottfried at the Woodstock Comedy Festival by going to woodstockcomedyfestival.org. woodstockcomedyfestival.org, 8 p.m. Saturday, September 24th. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.